Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. I'm sorry I couldn't be with you last week, but I had a rather heavy cold, which meant that my voice wasn't terribly good, and also a ticklish throat, which meant that I got into coughing spells, so I had to call that one off. I think I'm almost clear of it now, but of course in the meantime, the amount of articles and other info I've got has built up. And in between time, there has been a message from Matthew, which of course are normally quite long. So I've got two Sheldon Neidel messages to catch up on. So what I've done with those two is to edit some of the information out and stick to the more important stuff. So I'll read it virtually as one complete message. From last week, the message said that the logjam that has delayed the deliveries of the prosperity programs was being broken even as they spoke. And they said, and I quote, "the seemingly never-ending hold-ups appear finally to be at an end." Also, those involved with the return of America to her original constitutional status are likewise approaching a critical juncture in their mission. Thus, the time for the first part of your reality shift draws near. A bit further on, the message started to refer to first contact, saying that, as we have mentioned before, it is a complex process involving a multitude of necessary, interconnected steps for success. Besides this, we also monitor all of you very carefully to ensure the triumph of our Earth allies and our arrival en masse on your most beautiful shores. Since the start of this mission, much has happened on your world and in this galaxy. The peace that now prevails in the galaxy is very soon to become your own planet's very pleasant status quo. Realize that the approaching watershed has literally taken decades in the making and that an enormous amount of spadework has gone into undermining the dark's immense power base and getting the last dark cabal to its present state of panic and disarray. Now at last, the final elements are slotting into place and we are reiterating this for a purpose. We need to know that the end times are now here. Your world is preparing to burst into bloom as she returns to the wondrous joy that is divine light. Imagine what an intricate process it is to change so completely the face of Mother Earth. This colossal geophysical upheaval, contrary to your teachings on the subject, are not to take trillions or even thousands of years, but are to happen in the twinkling of an eye. And again, contrary to the teachings of your science, these changes are set by the workings of the divine. But rest assured, this is only to start once you have been removed to safety, which is another reason why our active presence at this time in your history is essential. Our first task is to allay those fears and end the vast cover-up that began in post-war World II era. We are not some rampaging group that created you to be a race of gold mining slaves, among many silly notions. And I interject there because, for people who are unaware of it, that reference is clearly one to the Anunnaki, who are the beings who pass through this solar system periodically on the starship called Nibiru, or Planet X, and in the history, which was translated by Sechariah Sitchin from the Sumerian tablets, he learnt that the Anunnaki did in fact create a slave race of humans, if they can be called that, which were to be employed in gold mining. So hence some people have evidently got hold of that story, and I imagine they've applied it to perhaps all types of ETs. That's missing the point, that it is only the Anunnaki, who, to the best of my knowledge, are in fact one of the reptilian groups. Having said that, the article here, or the paragraph, I should say, about this proceeds to say, we are, as will become swiftly obvious, a benevolent organisation of the light that has come here expressly to reunite you in love and joy with a long-lost colony. You, dear hearts, are from the stars. You are great souls who have suffered far too long under the fiendish rule of the dark, and now the moment for your prescribed liberation is at hand. The precondition for any constructive scenario is the removal of the present US regime. This entity is resolved to keep the UFO cover-up and carry on with its present course of escalating global confrontation. Ridding the planet of this dark force sets the stage for new possibilities, and as you know, a veritable cornucopia of sweeping changes is ready to roll. First among these is the ending of the US Federal Reserve. In truth, the private bank and not a government agency. In conjunction with bringing online of a new banking and currency system and tied into an inclusive global debt annulment program. An intrinsic component of this is the completion of the deliveries of the promised prosperity funds. Following swiftly on the heels of this will be an end to the phony war on terror and the withdrawal of all fighting forces from the Middle East. The emphasis then shifts to the creation of permanent world peace and developing global cooperation. Next, this initial momentum is to be turned towards encouraging a huge increase in your global society's ability to green each nation on the planet and create the infrastructure for raising global living standards. The scenario is to be accomplished by the release of hitherto suppressed and confiscated advances in technology. These devices and products can solve most of your present difficulties in a seemingly miraculous manner. Once these essentials are done, the subject of how to prepare your societies for our arrival comes up. The first phase, described above, starting with the removal of the US regime, is expected to take about 6 to 9 months. Thereafter, the transitional American government is to release the complete UFO files that until now have been kept in strictest secrecy. This will unleash a whirlwind of data into the public arena, including the truth of other unsavoury secret activities. These necessary revelations are expected to produce shock and public outcry. The transitional American president is to expound upon and clarify many important matters, and public debates and forums are to be set up to discuss the issues of what is revealed. This period of national debate sets the stage for our arrival. We need to know how you react to the fact that you are not alone and that you are of divine extraterrestrial origin. While we watch your reactions, we intend to supply your governments with whole panoply of magical technologies to prepare the ground for our coming mass landing event. Remember, together we are indeed victorious. Now I follow on with this week's message, which reads, we intimated that we currently intend to wait about 6 to 8 months after the fall of the present US regime before making ourselves public. We are doing this for two reasons. First, we want to be the hidden hand that ensures your unalienable rights and your massive abundance be delivered to you as promised. The divine desires us to act as heaven's true enforcers. This means we are to make sure that the various programs we are deliberately telling you about come into abundant fruition. The second reason for this delay is to give us time to prepare you for our arrival. At the right moment, we expect your governments to divulge our existence to you and to shower you with the release of documents that prove their involvement with various ETs even before the start of World War II. We did not appear out of the blue from 1945 onward. Our relations with your governments and our observations of you go way back into the twilight of your history, and this needs to be unveiled. Documents held by many governments reveal this in detail. Next in the lineup of revelations is the fact that your government's acquired esoteric technology via illegal covert treaties with the ETs and back-engineered from downed space vehicles. They now possess quite an inventory of advanced technologies that is being carefully hidden from the public by special secret operatives. All these disclosures either become the foundation for the immense amount of data that we wish to impart to you during the first phase of First Contact. We do not consider First Contact to be a rescue mission. We see it as a means to complete your journey back to full consciousness. The issue is how this is to be accomplished. A lot of specialized communication with your nations in the last decade produced a range of flexible options for achieving first contact. The one we are presently outlining to you is the result of lengthy discussions with our Earth allies. Naturally, we wish the operation to go over as easily and safely as possible, which means that your awakening to our presence must be done as seamlessly as is practical in the time allowed. The main challenge for us all is the negative press we have received at the hands of your governments and your media. Many untrue religious pronouncements about us also need to be set straight. These errors of perception arise from a variety of unfounded inner fears and prejudices, including an earth-centric xenophobia. Converting this false indoctrination about divine creation in general into a more spiritually mature outlook is essential. Government agencies are given carte blanche to use their esoteric technologies to stage abduction scenarios and other atrocities with the intent of instilling great fear and distrust of off-worlders. These operations have been most successful in diverting ufologists from the truth. As a result, UFO literature is filled with fantastical and confusing claims about our nature and intention. Such tomfoolery must end. You will learn that most of your genetic code is extraterrestrial in nature, and that your various teachings on the subject quite misrepresent how you came into being. As you absorb the truth in myriad areas, your fearful worldview will be soothed. Once what has been kept from you is absorbed, you can accept us quite naturally as human beings, who represent what you are about to become. In short, we are your destiny. Such is the healthy state of mind of a people on the brink of first contact. Such a society possesses the prerequisite technology and has a grasp of the changes it is going through. This society is ready for our arrival and gladly anticipates the responsibilities we require. The currently agreed upon plan aims to move you into this prepared state by instigating a global education project that is to remove the above mentioned liabilities. The transformative process now underway can be seen as two giant leaps for mankind. The first is about facing your current planetary direction, and this moves you to the level of planetary human. The second leap involves the acceleration of this direction by first contact, in which you are open to the world of galactic consciousness. This world and our arrival will begin to interface with yours at the time specified by Heaven and Lord Surya. It is an integral step in the divine plan. At this point, we are to bring you the expertise needed to turn you into galactic humans. All of this hinges on the removal of the present dark US regime and its many dark cabal allies. Know that this plan is under the aegis of Heaven, and if any prerequisite element does not play out as planned, we are charged with manifesting the shortfall. And so ends my edited version of the last 2 weeks of Sheldon Nidal's messages. I think it's true to say that for the first time, the various people channeling through Sheldon have indicated a time period commencing from the removal of the last cabal, intimating that it would be 6 to 8 or 9 months, during which time a lot of preparation and actions would go ahead, culminating with them coming en masse. Now, anyone who follows the political scenario, I think, would judge that there is so much evidence coming down upon the Bush administration about the corrupt way in which it obtained power, started an illegal war, and was involved in atrocities such as 9/11, to have them removed in the twinkling of an eye. But of course, it's easier said than done, and no doubt the legal way to remove them is somewhat long-winded. But go they will, and this is predicted, and must surely come about. Now I'll move on to Matthew's message, which came through last week. You may be aware that Matthew normally issues one per month, and the bulk of it is usually in answer to questions that are sent in by his followers. And his mother, Susie Ward, looks after that side and selects the questions that are put to Matthew. Now, I've edited Matthew's message this week, whereas normally I read them completely through. And I think I can do it this week because not every specific part perhaps is vitally necessary, in view of the fact that I'm trying to catch up on time. Now, Matthew was asked about demonstrations for peace continuing. Somebody was thinking about the polarity that is created and that war is at the other extreme, and wondered if this was delaying the balance surf needed for ascension. And Matthew said, that reader is echoing what is stirring in the minds of some who understand that changes underway are to achieve global balance, and they are trying to muffle their longing for peace by focusing on feeling neutral or in balance. And Matthew said, that isn't necessary. Please allow your natural inclinations for peace to be strong. What is happening is that the long reign of darkness is ending with the massive infusion of light that is bringing those opposites into balance. In light there is balance, and in darkness there is none. As he goes on to say, please do not think that because no mass landings have occurred and no space family members living in your midst have introduced themselves that they aren't here. Millions are working around the clock on your Earth's behalf. The day will come when you'll know the vastness of their vigilance and assistance in this unprecedented era in your world, and you will take your rightful place alongside your star brothers and sisters as citizens of the universe. Matthew went on to talk about basing God-honoring on people's free will. And he was asked the question, when does the free will decision of one cross the line and affect the free will decision of others? And Matthew said, the question is logical and the answer is simple, but we know that the widespread efforts of free will in action are not easy for you to understand. The answer is God, by whatever names the supreme being of this universe is called, has no choice but to honour every individual's expression of free will. God is bound to obey that law of Creator, even though it has resulted not only in the tumultuous, brutally destructive state of your world for millennia, but the total destruction of other planets and their civilizations. Free will is essential so that each individual throughout the universe can choose what to experience in the full spectrum of soul capacities in each lifetime, in physical body, or in spirit. A soul's crossing the line in one lifetime is the chance to balance another lifetime experience. When some other soul crossed the line and adversely impacted the first soul's desires and freely made decision. And he goes on to mention the same principle applies to large groups of souls acting out their choices also. Anyway, I proceed on further from that particular question. I come to a part where Matthew says, we understand the importance to you of reassurance that Earth is steady in her course and pace, but also we feel that telling you what we see in her energy field potential is important, so you are prepared, not surprised, and so you can have the same comfort as we denying that always souls are given other evolvement opportunities and never penalties for not recognizing the one at hand. Matthew then goes on to respond to someone who is talking about love and light in action. Matthew said, "No one who sends love and light, which is the same energy expressed differently and the most powerful force in the cosmos, would ever incur negative karma. And never could sending energy streams that are the very essence of Creator be construed as violating one's free will, because exercising free will is making a conscious choice. If the entangled recipient did not wish to receive the light, the barrier he or she has against it automatically would reject its entry, and consciously the person would never know that light had been sent." There was then a question talking about Easter and Christian beliefs, etc. And Matthew said, he, like almost every other soul on earth, does not have access to the records that prove Jesus had a long life with his wife, Mary Magdalene, and their children, and on a very recent basis, he didn't read God's message about Jesus' life in one of the books, and he refers to the Jesus chapter in Illuminations for a New Era, and he said, "I can't give a definitive explanation why some contend that the biblical story of Jesus is correct, but it would seem that their unwavering belief in religious dogma is the decisive factor. Regardless of whether a belief is based in fact or fiction, that is, in truth or falsehood, the belief is the person's reality, and it can overlayer the information being telepathically transmitted. Do not underestimate the powerful energy of belief." Matthew then went on to respond to a question about global warming, and he said, "Sadly, some marine populations and animal species living in frigid temperatures will not survive, but most can adapt far more readily to rising ocean and land temperatures than they can live in polluted waters or in sonar testing areas or in cages, much less evade slaughter for pelts or tusks, scientific experiments for delicacies such as caviar and fins. Some lie lowing..." That was a good expression, wasn't it? "Some low-lying coastal areas and other islands will be affected, as I mentioned before, along with stating that residents will have time to move to higher areas and be compensated for relocation. Al Gore's sincere interest in environmental issues is of long standing. Whether he will use this to politically..." "Whether he will use this to political advantage remains to be seen. I don't know if any of the scientists who say global warming is a naturally recurring episode are enlightened. What we do know is that scientists who are espousing that opinion are employed by governments or corporations, and the interest of both categories is financial, not environmental. Hence, I suppose he is suggesting there that the scientists employed by those people will give the type of answers that they seek." Moving on a bit. Matthew was saying about the war in the Middle East that this unconscionable war has to end soon. Some questions are about that. Most writers want to know when all troops will be withdrawn from Iraq. And one asked, "Did troop withdrawal begin but wasn't publicly announced because the government felt it shouldn't be known for security reasons?" Someone wrote that his question is rhetorical, and probably you can't answer it. How can members of Congress justify adding pork barrel amendments to legislation that includes a timeline for bringing our troops home? Now, Matthew said, "No real troop withdrawal has occurred, only rotation, and we can't tell you from the scattered activity in the energy field of potential when all foreign troops will leave Iraq. The Illuminati's determination to occupy that country as a necessary step to controlling the entire Mideast is as strong as ever. Those are the minds incapable of lucid thought, and although global interest in troop withdrawal is strong, Congress is dilly-dallying over legislating this. As for the rhetorical question, I believe I can answer it. Re-election. Pleasing the constituents who voted those members into office and the corporations that funded their campaigns. Matthew's mother Susie said, I guess so, there's still that much greed and power mongering here. And Matthew continued by saying there are also threats and bribes, and Bush's pledge to veto any bill calling for troop withdrawal deadlines. Those are part of this, but as I have often stated, while this may be thought of as Bush's war, he is the figurehead for the Illuminati's war and does what he is told. And Susie replied with his abysmal ratings in the polls and world opinion largely against his decisions, I've wondered why the Illuminati haven't assassinated him. Matthew said, Mother, you aren't thinking about the two Illuminati factions and that Bush is cloned. At least two of the clones have been killed. But the Bush faction made certain that new clones were available without the President's undue absence from the public eye. That's probably the second or more occasion that Matthew's mentioned about Bush being a clone. I have to say, I would like to know more information about that. Haven't quite put that one into place, but I do believe the information that Matthew puts out, so I wait to be enlightened on that one. Susie asks Matthew, what does Matthew think about the confession of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed that he was responsible for the 9/11 operation from A to Z? And short answer here, I'm going to read out. Matthew said, I know a bit about this from Earth Monitors in Nirvana, and they attribute everything that any prisoners have confessed to coercion through torture, sleep deprivation, hunger, implanted ideas, and other means of extracting whatever the official line needs to be. So there you have it. Matthew doesn't normally make accusations, but I think we can read enough into that to say that that person wasn't exactly telling the truth. Final question Matthew was asked was, since their life isn't exactly ideal, why do souls keep coming to live as Sasquatch and Yeti? And he said, this race has long known that a golden age would arrive on Earth, for whom they feel deep love and affinity. And then they would live among the rest of the enlightened people, and they love family life, so the same souls keep returning. He said, Mother, I know your question, so I'll answer it. The soul's new personage, the infant, comes with and retains fourth or fifth density intelligence and spiritual clarity. And the fact that there is little change in experiencing during the Earth lifetime, that is, virtually no opportunity for soul growth, is not an issue because the cumulative soul's evolvement comes with its personages throughout the universal continuum who are living in civilizations more advanced than fourth and fifth. He said, yes, I know this brings us back to the confusion of soul, so again I tell you that in time you will know the simplicity of the oneness of all. Matthew said, as a final comment, please keep foremost in your thoughts that God loves all souls unconditionally, as do all of us at this station, and we also respect and honour you as the bright, shining, beautiful souls you are. There we are. I thought that was nice. I come now to general news. Obviously, over 2 weeks, a few things have accumulated, as usual, bits and bobs about 9/11, never far away, and there's a few more in the batch I've got today. The first article I will refer to came from the Canadian National newspaper, article written by John Stokes. And he was responding to a question asking whether civilizations of advanced human beings existed scattering the galaxy. Now, he said that a group of researchers working at the Human Genome Project indicate that they made an astonishing scientific discovery. They believe so-called 97% non-coding sequences in human DNA is no less than genetic code of extraterrestrial life forms. The non-coding sequences are common to all living organisms on Earth, from moles to fish to humans. In human DNA, they constitute a larger part of the total genome, says Professor San Chang, group leader. Non-coding sequences, originally known as junk DNA, were discovered years ago and their function remained a mystery. The overwhelming majority of human DNA is off-world in origin. The apparent extraterrestrial junk genes merely enjoy the ride, with hard-working active genes passed from generation to generation. So there we are. That's a very interesting find. And isn't it wonderful how these discoveries and the news comes out very appropriately at a time when we are soon to welcome our own brothers and sisters from space. There always seems to be a logic and a plan behind all the things that happen. A little bit of news here that I'm sure travelled far because of the nature of it. And it was about a man who moved from Alaska to, to Denver. And he let his Alaska driving license run out and then applied for one in Denver. And when he was in the office giving his details, at one point they required him to submit a thumbprint. And he complained about the lack of freedom in the Denver state and asked them why they just didn't tell everyone that in order to get a driver's license in their state, they would need to bring in a suitcase full of IDs as well as blood and urine samples to go with the thumbprints. I get a feeling he was getting a bit annoyed then. Anyway, he said the supervisor then informed me that as of May 2008, that won't be necessary, as every state will require, as per federal law, every driver to go to the DMV and obtain a federal ID number, which will be implanted in the hand of the individual. And he said they actually told me this at the DMV. Apparently, several years ago, the federal government tried to get a law passed requiring everyone to receive a federal ID number, and it was turned down by the citizens of the United States. Now, I don't know the full facts here, but I gather it's might not be full law already, but anyway, there are certainly people are planning to try and get that, if it is law already, overturned. But the final point I make here is it's what you won't be able to do if you refuse to have this federal ID number and the implant in your hand. Apparently, you won't be able to drive, travel on commercial aircraft, go into federal buildings. You cannot step on federal lands. In other words, you could say goodbye to hiking, camping, rafting, those type of things. You won't receive Social Security or any federal funds and benefits. You won't receive tax funds, work for the federal government, receive wages from the federal government, and serving any of the armed forces and receive VA benefits, and so it goes on. In other words, you'd be a brave man or woman, I suppose, not to accept the implant. Either that or you give up driving your car, I suppose, and buy yourself a bike. Next article I've got here is one that talks about a presidential candidate, Ron Paul. Congressman Ron Paul warns elite believe they own us and are always prepared to take, as he calls it, our liberties. Now, this is something that came off the net, Infowars.net, and it was, I think, a discussion by Steve Watson and Alex Jones. And they quote that Ron Paul warned that the US is now at a crisis point because the people have been so neglectful of protecting their liberties and big government has been so effective in eroding them. He warned that the elite are prepared to concoct events to scare the American people and asserted that the 2008 presidential election is a contest between the people who care about their freedoms and those who are willing to succumb to the temptations of dictatorship. Ron Paul joined Alex Jones on the air this week for a full hour to discuss his ongoing presidential campaign and give his views on what he believes are the fundamental issues in America today. When asked what he believes the overriding issue in America today is, Congressman Ron Paul pointed towards the erosion of personal freedoms. He said, quote, "Probably it's the threat to individual liberty because our government is growing endlessly by leaps and bounds, and nobody seems to want to put a hold on it. Every time government grows, it is at the expense of personal liberty." So there you are. Be warned, that it's nice to know. There's someone like Ron Paul who's prepared to stand up and say his piece. Now, last week, from the Time magazine, short extract here, written by Joe Klein, came out on the 5th of April, actually, and it was referring to the fact that Joe Klein hinted at Bush's impeachment, and he said, quote, "I've tried to be respectful of the man and the office, but the three defining sins of the Bush administration, arrogance, incompetence, cynicism, are congenital. They're part of his personality. They're not likely to change. And it is increasingly difficult to imagine yet another 2 years of slow bleed with a leader so clearly unfit to lead." There we are. So, that was in the Time magazine. From Washington, AFP, Friday, April the 6th, came another report, but I mention only a very small extract because of the nature of it. It really pinpoints what the article was about. And it's saying that interrogations of Saddam Hussein and seized documents confirm that the former Iraqi regime had no connection with Al-Qaeda. This apparently was a Pentagon report which contradicts the US case for the 2003 invasion. A two-page resume of the report was published in February, but on Friday the Pentagon declassified the whole 120-page document. And according to the Inspector General of the US Defense Department, information obtained after Saddam's fall confirmed the pre-war position of the CIA and Pentagon intelligence that the Iraqi government had no substantial contacts with Al-Qaeda. I think that's interesting because much is made of the terrorist movements that Al-Qaeda are alleged to run. And of course, they're connected almost with every big terrorist event that takes place. I move on to a website here, globalanalysis.net, and it's the latest word on the what has now become known as the Watergate scandal, the business connected with Leo Wanter and the funds that are being held back and not returned to him. I'm looking quickly over the whole document. In actual fact, although this extract came out of a greater report, this particular bit actually refers to Tony Blair, the British Prime Minister, so I will read on. In fact, there's nothing at all in this bit about the Watergate scandal, but that's what the whole article included. Apparently on the BBC 6 o'clock news, it showed British Prime Minister Tony Blair walking out of number 10 Downing Street to the waiting microphone and stating boldly that there had been absolutely no concession or side deals by the British authorities that had resulted in the release of the military personnel captured by the Iranian authorities. Mr. Blair broadcast what is called here this inaccurate statement, wearing the most sincere expression in his adaptable facial armoury. And the article says, "Please be advised immediately that the British Prime Minister is a barefaced liar. The sum of money paid by prison to Mr. Dinner Jacket for the release of the British personnel was 25 million euros. The same BBC 6 o'clock news reported the parallel deaths of four British servicemen in Basra. The TV camera showed various pieces of pipe bombs and other bomb parts on display recently by British military officials. One of the components shown was a finely engineered component, which the TV camera clearly showed was marked Lot 116. The writer here says, "The Iranian, Soviet, German, French and Italian bomb manufacturers do not label their bomb components with the use of the English word lot. So we checked with impeccable US sources and pointed out sharply that American bombs are being used to blow British soldiers to smithereens. One source said that the bombs being used for this purpose might be Canadian, but they are indeed almost certainly American, adding, that I have known about this for the past 25 years, I'm not surprised at this at all. British debts then are no more than collateral damage. Apparently the payment, if it is true, of the €25 million to release the imprisoned naval personnel has destabilised Cheney's plan to bomb Iraq back into the Stone Age. And they said they learned on the morning this report went out from their authority sources that he is furious and not being able to proceed with his plan. So that's all on that one. A few September the 11th bits here. One that is talking, I'll say who it's from first. It's on the rings.com website, an article by Mark H. Gaffney. And he's talking about the eyes of the nation, which were focused on the events of the World Trade Center and how the networks interrupted their coverage in New York with a breaking story from Washington. And he refers to a white plane that was sighted over the White House. Witnesses who saw it said it circled over Washington, and CNN senior White House correspondent John King saw it while standing in Lafayette Park, which is directly across from the White House. And King reported live that about 10 minutes ago there was a white jet circling overhead. Now, generally, you don't see planes in the area over the White House. That is restricted airspace. And he said no reason to believe that this jet was there for any nefarious purposes, but the Secret Service was very concerned, pointing up at the jet in the sky. Kate Snow, another CNN correspondent, standing two blocks from the Capitol when she saw the plane. She saw it and mentioned on air that a security guard told her it was responsible for the decision to evacuate the seat of government. And in his book Against All Enemies, Counterterrorism Czar Richard A. Clarke mentioned that the decision to evacuate the White House was made after a warning from the Secret Service about the approach of an unidentified aircraft. So he's asking, was this the mystery plane? And other people picked up the story and mentioned it. Now, this follows on by saying all of this raises disturbing questions. And why was, importantly, the world's most sophisticated electronics warfare plane circling over Washington at the time of the September 11 attack? Apparently, when an investigator filed a Freedom of Information Act request, he found that the white plane was an E-4B, which was over Washington on the 9/11. He contacted the FAA and they responded it had no knowledge of such a plane. And the writer said, my contact also shared the basic information presented in this article with his congressman, Republican Adam Schiff, and requested that he look into the matter. Schiff then made a formal inquiry through official channels, but was told that the Air Force knows nothing. And the writer concludes here, obviously the Pentagon is lying. If the E-4B was on a legitimate mission on September 11, why does the military deny its presence? Why would they do this? When people lie, it's generally because they have something to hide. He says, is the US military any different? I pass on to another article that came off Rens.com website. This is under the heading Patriots Question 911.com. It refers to Lieutenant Colonel Guy Razor. He was a former instructor on the at the USAF Fighter Weapons School, and NATO's Tactical Leadership Program had a 20-year Air Force career. And he said, after 4+ years of research since retirement in 2002, I'm 100% convinced that the attacks of September 11, 2001, were planned, organized, and committed by treasonous perpetrators that have infiltrated the highest levels of our government. It is now time to take our country back. And he refers to the collapse of WTC Building 7 and said it wasn't hit by an airplane and shows beyond any doubt that demolitions were pre-planned. And they refer again to something that's become news about the BBC News referring to the collapse before it happened, And he said further damning evidence is Larry Silverstein's videotape confession, in which he states they made that decision to call WTC7 and we watched the building collapse. There we are. 9/11 won't go away. Another sort of final, is it a final one? No, I've got any more. No, a couple of bits left. Another report here from the website called whatreallyhappened.com. And it's referring to two Australian soldiers who served in the first Iraq war who had been tested positive to depleted uranium contamination, despite assurances from the federal government they had not been exposed, an anti-nuclear group said today. And today in that case was March the 28th. And the comment reads that any such admission from the government would leave it open to millions of dollars in compensation, said Pauline Rigby, project coordinator for the group Depleted Uranium Silent Killer. So there we are. I wonder where that one will lead. Apparently there are quite a lot of troops that have suffered sickness and other forms of illness, which can be directly attributed to being affected by depleted uranium. Another shorty here about 9/11, and where did this one come from? Apparently no reference here, but it talks of an ex-senior CIA official who calls the government's 9/11 version a monstrous series of lies. And he also apparently goes on to say, unless this is extracted from another report, but it's on the same page, that with the outing of Valerie Plame, that 107 agents were killed. And he said, these brave undercover agents' deaths have not even been mentioned in 99.9% of the articles to date. I do remember reading that it had an on effect, and quite a number of agents were found out, as you might say, and murdered, but I'm astonished to find it's such a big number. I have got something else on 9/11. I thought that was the end of it. I've got another couple of pieces here. It's saying that reports appeared in several news medias that some of the people the US says were 9/11 hijackers are actually still alive. Now, that's not the first time that has been mentioned, but they talk in particular about the pilot, Walid al-Sheri, who is one of the men the FBI said crashed a plane into the WTC, and his photograph was released. And he acknowledges that he is indeed the Walid al-Sheri named by the FBI. But he says he left the US last year and became a pilot with Saudi Arabian Airlines. And the Saudi government insists that five of the Saudis mentioned are still alive. So there we are. The whole story gets most peculiar, doesn't it? I wonder who's going to rate that one over and see what they can make of that. In an article called Again from Rens.com website, one by Paul Chen, he was talking about David Ray Griffin, who is widely recognised as one of the leading spokespersons of the 9/11 Truth Movement. He's written books about it, and although the movement was long ignored by the US government and mainstream media, recent polls have shown, and apparently the Time magazine has acknowledged this, that the rejection of the official theory has become a mainstream political phenomenon. And in David Ray Griffin's new book entitled Debunking 9/11, he shows that the attempts to debunk the truth can also be debunked themselves. And Paul Chen reports that in his book he says debunking 9/11 is a superb compendium of the strong body of evidence showing the official US government story of what happened on September 11, 2001. Be almost certainly a monstrous series of lies. Tragically, the entire course of US foreign and domestic policy since that date has grown out of these almost certain falsehoods. And that was said by Bill Christensen, who was a former senior official of the CIA. Now, there's a couple of little bits left now, and then I can close the programme with a little bit from my UFO file. I've got left a couple of items here now. This one is talking about the IRS. I think it comes off the website called supremelaw.org, and it's saying that even if the IRS were a de jure service or bureau within the US Department of the Treasury, which they are not, they would still not have any authority to create a tax liability by means of regulations published in the Federal Register. So in point of fact, IRS has been impersonating the Congress and impersonating the US Department of Treasury. And these are violations under other acts or laws. Now, this matter about whether the IRS can collect taxes or not has been going on for a while, but there you are. Like all good stories, it doesn't go away. Now, a final item in the general news is sort of, as you might say, good news. It's from the NewYorkTimes.com website, and it's comes from a report made in Washington on March 30th by Felicity Barringer. And she was talking basically about a ruling that was made by Judge Phyllis J. Hamilton of Federal District Court in San Francisco, who said that the Forest Service had violated several laws when it changed the rules forest managers must follow when making decisions, and did so without consulting the public or considering environmental impact. And the judge issued an injunction forbidding the service from using the rules to make decisions about national forests and grasslands, which cover 8% of the country. Apparently, what happened, the Bush administration revised the rules of management of the country's 155 national forests, saying that the Federal Forest Service violated the basic laws ensuring that forest ecosystems have environmental safeguards. Those rules were apparently issued in early 2005, but at least they've been cancelled now, which is good news. Now, on the UFO front, don't we often seem to get many reports in the general run of things, but there's one here from a website called Chevelle.net, and it was talking about a remote controlled UFO that landed and was spotted near Biolo Birdi Town in South Somalia. And apparently, villagers reported that the device fell 5 days ago in that area, which lies 40 kilometres north of Biolo Birdi Town. Now, this report was written or updated last on March 26th. And they said the device is occupying an area of 100 metres square. That's a pretty big size, isn't it? And the villagers who spotted this device confirmed that to Chevelle Radio. And it is said that on the evening of last Wednesday, a large device flew over our head, and moments later, we heard a large sound. Bam, said Igor Sally, a villager who lives nearby where this large device had fallen. Ilias spoke of the device, telling that in the daylight it glitters, and in the night time it turns lights on and off and speaks in a strange language which couldn't be understood by the villagers. And because of the remote area it fell, news of the device is emerging gradually now, despite its fall of 5 days ago. So that would be an interesting one, wouldn't it, to find out what any further investigation reveals. Because you have to wonder, is it an ET craft, which sounds more likely, or is it perhaps one of the new American back-engineered spacecraft that they're trying out? We wait with interest, I think, to find out a little bit more about that one. I've mentioned already about the Human Genome Project that indicated they've made an astonishing scientific discovery about the so-called 97% non-coding sequences in human DNA. I've actually got a longer article here, but since I've already mentioned it, and it covers the main point of the article, I won't read through yet another one. I have a report here that came off the website unknowncountry.com. And the whole article is a summary by Whitley Strieber on the recent spate of UFO sightings and disclosures by important political figures and governments. And it's painfully apparently all written by Michael Sella. I'm trying to work out whose name's doing what here. Anyway, it's a report that goes back to the 24th of March. And it's saying that the past 6 months have been the most astonishing period of change in the whole history of the UFO phenomenon. Not since the early 50s have there been so many and such extensive sightings, and never with such a level of official support for the reality of the phenomenon. To touch on just a few highlights, there have been extensive sightings in many parts of the world, with large numbers of reports out of the UK and especially Iran. The United States has had the extraordinary O'Hare airport sighting, among others. But it's not just the sightings that are changing things, it is the disintegration of the UFO cover-up. Governor Fife Symington of Arizona, who orchestrated one of the most harmful debunking press conferences in the history of the phenomenon, when he turned the Phoenix Lights into an international laughing stock, now says that he actually saw the greatest mystery of that night, a huge black triangle to pass over the region. Prior to that, former Canadian Defence Minister Paul Hellyer said frankly that, and quote, UFOs are as real as the planes that fly over your head. And apparently in February, the British Ministry of Defence issued almost 500 pages of previously secret UFO documents that both showed that the Ministry found many sightings credible and unexplained, and included a remarkable comment by an unnamed author, quote, the national security implications are considerable. We have had many reports of strange objects in the skies, and we have never investigated them. I also believe that it is important to appreciate that what is scientific fact today may not be true tomorrow. If reports are taken at face value, then devices exist that do not use conventional reaction propulsion systems, that have a very wide range of speed and are stealthy. I suggest that we could use this technology if it exists. If the sightings are of devices, not of the Earth, then their purpose needs to be established as a matter of priority. And he lists the possibilities. 1. Military reconnaissance. 2. Scientific. 3. Tourism. And so the article went on mentioning how the French government has also opened its entire UFO files, which contain thousands of reports, and saying that there is no evidence that the obsessively secretive US will ever release any real information, at least not as it is now constituted. It has, after all, led the world in 50 years of denial about the most important event in human history, which is the fact that an unknown intelligence has been involved with us for at least 60 years, and possibly longer, maybe even a lot longer. We do not know what this intelligence is, of course. It could be aliens from another planet or planets, but it also be something very different. This is a big, immeasurably old and complex universe, consisting largely of what we call dark matter, which we have never even detected. In this universe, it may be possible to travel across time. It may be possible to move among very physical realities that coexist in the same time-space. And so the report goes on from some unnamed person. Of course, we know a little bit more, don't we, than this. Right, thank you, everyone. That's the end of the programme for this week. Thank you for being with me. God bless you all.